Welcome, welcome to How I Got Through It. Today we're talking with Valerie Del Sol, and if you know her or you know of her, then you know that she is a powerhouse in her field. We met over dinner through some friends, and after having a conversation that evening, I knew that I wanted to have her on the podcast. She's an executive coach and life coach certified by the International Coaching Federation. Her clients are C-suite high-level executives at Goldman Sachs, Facebook, Sony Music, and Condé Nast, just to name a few. Today, we get into the conversation and we really dig in on how to get to the next level in your life and how to break through some of the existing doubts that creep up in your mind if you really want to be a leader. Let's get right into the conversation with Valerie and welcome back to How I Got Through It. Valerie, thank you so much for being here with us and making the time to do this interview. I am so excited to have you on the podcast this week. You are a powerhouse woman. You coach a lot of executives in many companies, which we'll talk about as we get into the interview, but a lot of well-known companies and a lot of executives that are in the C-suite. So first of all, thank you so much for making the time to be here with me today.
Well, thank you for having me here today. It's a pleasure and an honor.
Awesome. So I just really want to get into some questions that I've had for you in preparation for this interview. Like I just mentioned, you know, you are a powerhouse woman. And when I started thinking about that, and also in relation to myself, many girls are taught to grow up dreaming of their wedding and not really are taught to grow up dreaming of what their life could be aside from that. Girls are not taught to become entrepreneurs. They're not taught to negotiate a salary for their first corporate job. So specifically as a female entrepreneur, as you are also building your business, what are the hurdles do you think that women face in entrepreneurship?
Well, there's definitely a culture gap between what men encounter and what women encounter. And there's also a bunch of situations and beliefs that sometimes are in the way of women developing more because, for example, we're being taught that we should be quiet, that we should behave a certain way, and that we should not ask for more or anything like that. And all the shoulds, I cringe at shoulds, yeah, even when my clients say it, mm-hmm, because to me, that's something of the mind and that's not where it's at. I think it's very real what women feel is appropriate and not appropriate and what we're being told by society and all sorts of diktats to do or not to do.
Yeah, I think that also for me too, when I walk into a room and it's maybe an all-male room or it's a board meeting or something of that nature, I do feel a slight hint of imposter syndrome. Can I be as good as the men before me if I have to speak my opinion? And I think that maybe that is something to do with confidence and self-esteem that's not infused from our childhood.
Definitely, definitely. But I have this joke I tell my clients, you know, this joke that I've heard about the imposter syndrome that says, but are you even good enough to have imposter syndrome? And particularly the truth is there are so many men who have imposter syndrome just as well. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we also go to this tendency of separation, thinking, oh, well, we women, because of historically, we're separate. But really, a lot of the time, it's the same issues, except for what you just said, that somehow when we go into a boardroom or something, we have this extra thing to prove that we belong there.
Right. Just that, because we're female, you know, it's really strange.
Yes. But really, the truth is, you know, people of other minority feel the same way, mm-hmm, and have to prove the same thing. So it's not just women. Of course, if you're a woman from another minority, then it's even harder, mm-hmm, which is very unfortunate and shouldn't be at all.
Tell me a little bit about how you got started in this business.
Oh, I went to coaching school. At the time, we were kind of pioneers. Coaching was not even considered a profession, had hardly any kind of traction. And I was lucky enough to meet the founder of the coaching profession and the founder of the International Coaching Federation, the late Thomas Leonard. And I went to school and we basically wrote the book of coaching all together, quite a bunch of us. It was a long time ago. And then I got certified and I'm now a master coach. I'm the only 4% of coaches are master coaches. So I'm very lucky and happy to be at the top of my profession. And I try to really work at it every day.
That's incredible. And just give us some examples of companies that you work with.
So the main one I've worked with is Goldman Sachs. There's also American Express, First Republic, Sony, Bank of London. They're quite a few financial, especially companies.
And when we talk about coaching and coaching people in the C-suite, what does that involve for you?
Well, I like to say that I help to get people to their highest potential. Mm-hmm. And to really make sure that they reach that potential, because a lot of the times we don't even know how much we are able to do and how far we're able to go. Mostly it involves being aware of things that can be in the way of our success. And so it's helping to uncover those parts of ourselves or those beliefs in ourselves that are a hindrance to our development and to our growth.
Is it hard to coach the leader versus also the person? Do you ever have to delve into other things that are going on in their life? Do you see them holistically? Like when you're sitting down with a CEO, for example, are you looking at them holistically or how does that happen for you?
Absolutely. You cannot coach the profession or the person in that particular suit only. You have to coach the whole person. And I always smile when people ask me whether I'm an executive coach or a life coach. And I'm like, what's the difference? There is no difference. You can't. And you're not exactly as much as some people say, well, I'm different at home than I'm at work. Yeah, maybe not that much.
Right. It's all intertwined. You know, this podcast is called How I Got Through It, because I feel like if there's something going on in your home life, it certainly does bleed into all the other areas of your life. I think of myself holistically. I think that when I'm happier at home and then also in my daily activities, it shows up in my work area as well. Do you find that there are common traits between leaders and entrepreneurs that they all have a certain set of habits or traits that you see time and time again when you're sitting down with someone in a C-suite?
Well, of course, there are the usual suspects, which are basically ambition, drive, power, maybe ego, maybe the need for recognition, maybe just a desire to lead or to be competitive or to climb the ladder, or just plain adrenaline, you know, adrenaline mm-hmm. can play a role as well. Mm-hmm. So there's many reasons why people can be or want to be a leader. Mm-hmm. And then there's some who are natural born leaders, and there's some that are, you know, have to work at it as leaders. And most of the time I find that, you know, and this is very generalization, very much so, but people who are at that level have very discipline on some level. Mm-hmm.
I think maybe that's the key as well to being disciplined and being able to do something over and over without constantly looking at the results, but just think of the long-term game, you know?
Yes. And a lot of them do keep their eyes on the prize.
Right, right.
That keeps them going.
So then why do people get stuck at a certain level? What's your experience on that?
Well, generally, it's because of your beliefs mm-hmm. and or some, you know, blocks that you mentally have designed in your mind. Mm-hmm. And also, I think sometimes it has to do with the environment, because some leaders don't see how things have changed. Like, for example, historically, when we were cavemen, what leaders needed were muscles. They needed to go hunt and make sure that they had food and everything. So that was the main thing that was the driver. Right. Then came the fact that leaders needed a brain so that they had the IQ, the intelligence to lead. Mm-hmm. And now a lot of what we see and what certainly we drive for is leaders with a heart, who can show empathy.
Yeah.
And sometimes people get confused.
Right. Right. Because when you start to wear your heart on your sleeve as a leader, then that leaves you exposed to all kinds of other things like criticism. You can get offended. Probably you're exposed in a way, right? That's a very vulnerable position also for a leader to be in.
Well, the idea is not necessarily to expose yourself to that level, but to show empathy and compassion and to just really what a good leader does. He takes care or she takes care of the people. Mm-hmm. We take care of the people, as Simon Sinek would say. And it's really about taking care of the people, but you cannot take care of the people when you're all muscle or all brain.
I look at some female leaders like Oprah, for example, right? Mm-hmm. Who seems to show a lot of empathy, show a lot of compassion. You kind of feel like you resonate with her by just watching her on TV or maybe watching a video of her. But I do think that you also, as a leader, have to have some kind of armor around you or some kind of toughness around you. And we talked about drive as well. Yet she appears that she does wear her heart on her sleeve. How do you find that balance?
Well, you're right. It is a balance. I don't know about the armor idea, but what I'd say is that it's also in the case of Oprah, it's her brand. She wants you to know that she relates to you and she wants to make you better. Mm-hmm. That is the messaging behind Oprah. And that's what she really wants you to go to. And it works. People do relate. People find her very much like themselves. So she manages to find a way to bridge and to connect with you on a pretty deep level. Leaders can manage to have that connection when they're very successful and really make you feel like they really care. And that's not necessarily wearing your heart on your sleeve as much as it is, I'm there for you, I have your back, and what can I do to help? There was a story about the Navy SEALs, and they say, you know, the Navy SEALs are very tough people. Mm-hmm. And it's not so much the tough ones that make it. It's not the 6 feet tall, like super, you know, muscular guy that make it. It's the guy that help others.
Mm.
And those are the one who really make it. And it's really about looking left and right. I mean, who is there around you? Who is helping you? Who is your community? You know, how do you belong? How do you matter? How do you get valued? How do you value others?
Mm-hmm. Does that also translate to if you're an entrepreneur as well, those same traits you think are what makes a person a certain level of success, you know, in the entrepreneurship space?
I like to think so. Absolutely. For me, it's about serving and making sure that I provide something and that possibly wherever I go, I leave it a better place than when I came in.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder, what do you see in that for yourself, Hannah? What have you seen in terms of how your career was shaped by possibly others or how you shaped other people's careers?
I was born in Barbados, and ever since I was 14, I always like looked for a mentor or looked for the person that was in the next best place that I was, whether I was in class or college or whatever it may be. And in Barbados, I didn't have access to that easily because we all had the same sphere of influence. And I'm the first person to go to college in my family. Mm. But I remember when we got dial-up internet, I would look up interviews or different things that I could read or try to order books or read articles. And that was the way I associated with people. I remember reading about Walt Disney and Margaret Thatcher and all of these people that I didn't have access to. And also my surroundings weren't exactly a surrounding where I could look to someone and ask a question because they hadn't been in a place where I wanted to go. So I used the access to media and articles to create that for myself. And then when I got to college, I was so excited because they would have talks and conferences with people that I could look to become a mentor. And I found mentors in my teachers. And I always look and find and seek out someone that is in the next level that I am to be able to ask my questions and interact with and bounce ideas off of and also just be a sounding board for me. And also in my job, I have a mentor as well. And in this podcast space, I also have another mentor as well. I think that I'm luckily born in the age where the internet was just booming, like just starting mm-hmm. from dial-up mm-hmm. to what we have now. And it's the age of information. I think that that really helped Because where I wouldn't be able to sit down and have coffee with like a Sheryl Sandberg, I can certainly listen to an interview that she did yesterday, or I can go on her Instagram and see what she's involved in. I just saw yesterday that she's leaving Facebook and she's going to be doing some new endeavors. And it's like information instantly that you get, and you get to hear people's opinions on certain things, which also shapes the way that I think. When I'm constantly going, well, wonder why they did that. And then it gives me more things to think about and hones in on my leadership skills. So I think the age of the information that just has really helped shape me as a leader in my own space.
Well, definitely. And obviously you use it very well. What you describe is a lot of curiosity,
yes,
and wanting to grow and being led. And those are fantastic traits that one should always develop, you know, and want to have. The other thing I would say that's really important is emotional intelligence. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of the times it's really about connecting to another person, right, relating, identifying, and understanding what they're about, what mm-hmm. makes them tick. This way you have a more immediate relationship with a person when you can connect on that level.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I find that the other part that I see in leaders when I'm just observing them is they have a certain amount of grit and ability to get through failure. And I think that that is a thing that maybe leaders or people that want to become leaders that are my age have a hard time with, because a lot of things are easily accessible to us, right? Like information and stories of success and different things. But I think if I were to compare leaders to today to leaders maybe 20, 30 years ago, like just raising capital, for example, is a lot easier today than it was, you know, 20, 30 years ago. Mm-hmm. How do you coach people to get through their failures?
Well, I think, you know, like you said, basically failures are part of life. And for some reason in this culture, at a very young age, you told, oh, you can only be great, you cannot fail. I've seen so many parents go advocate for their child so they wouldn't fail. Mm-hmm. And I found that to be a great disservice mm-hmm. to the children or to whomever. There's a beautiful book that's called The Gift of Failure. And it's really important to know to fail. It's really important to know that that does not define you. That does not give you an identity. That failure does not mean that you're doomed for the rest of your life. It just means that was not the right path for you, or that it didn't work for you. So if you see a little child trying to walk, they fall a lot. Mm-hmm. But what do? They stay on the floor because they fell. No, they pick themselves up and they keep going, and they mm-hmm. fall again and they fall again. And then eventually they walk. Mm-hmm. And this is the same thing, really. It's really about, okay, this didn't work, but I'm going to keep trying, and it's okay. And most likely there's a better route than the one you failed at, because we have to also be very guarded about what it is we want. Mm-hmm. Sometimes what we want is not the best for us. And we don't see that. We don't know that. So it's about, okay, this didn't work. Let's keep going. And most leaders really know that that is part of the equation.
Right, right. And if you don't, you will shortly find out as you embark on entrepreneurship or leadership in general.
Yes. But really, at the end of the day, it comes from knowing yourself. It's like the old Socrates thing, know thyself.
Yes.
What are you good at? What do you like? What do you enjoy? What are your skills? What are your assets? And most leaders that are very good at something, they surround themselves with people that are good at other things that they're not good at. Mm-hmm. And compensate that way. And that's fine. It works well.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. How do you think about purpose in your job? You know, 50 years ago, you could work for a company and you could be there for till you retired. You could start right out of college and retire from that company. Now, people are, you know, moving if they get a better offer somewhere else. Even as an entrepreneur, you are creating a company and then you exit maybe in 3-4 years and then you start another company. So there's not the same thought process as there was 50 years ago. So how do you find, or should you even find, purpose in your work? Is that where you should be sourcing your purpose from? Or how do you think about that?
Purpose can come in so many different forms, and it doesn't have to be necessarily attached to your work. I mean, maybe there is purpose, there is mission, there is what it is that you want to do in the world or in your life. Mm-hmm. Really, for me, I think it's about growing continuously, mm-hmm. and making sure that I keep my values aligned with what it is that I do. Mm-hmm. Because if they're not, somehow there's a misalignment and it doesn't work. Mm-hmm. And that's probably doomed or something. Yeah. And just being aware of what's the direction I want to go into. Mm-hmm. What do you see yourself doing possibly? And not necessarily that you should cast, you know, a vision for a gazillion years ahead, but what is your goal? And also the question I really ask all my clients all the time, what is most important to you?
Yeah. Yeah. I actually just asked myself that, like, as you were talking, you said, you know, be aligned with what you believe in and stuff. I was like, you know, I don't know that I have written out for this year what it is that I believe in. So I even know what to get aligned with, you know, and also what my worldview is. I knew it maybe 3 years ago, but it has changed a lot since the pandemic. And maybe I should sit down again and start to think about that and see how that has aligned with me. Because, you know, as you're talking, I hear you say often, know yourself. I hear that a lot in these interviews that I do as well. It always comes back to just knowing yourself and knowing what you believe and knowing what you want. Do you believe in therapy? What are your thoughts on therapy, especially when you're coaching someone? I know that's not exactly a part of your probably coaching curriculum, but is it something you suggest? When I think about knowing yourself, I think that that's probably where you get to know the deep parts of yourself.
Sure. I mean, definitely. And there's a big distinction between coaching and therapy. And if you allow me, I'll just give you the quick
definition. Sure, sure.
You know, therapy is about going into your past and trying to heal those wounds from the past. It really helps with the present. Coaching goes from the present to the future. Does not necessarily look in the past, or very briefly, passingly, to just understand something, but that's not what coaching is about. And so, of course, there are many situations where one can suggest therapy to a client, because I am not trained to do that part of work, and right. nor is it really my mandate with the client necessarily, the scope of work that we've decided. Mm-hmm. So absolutely. I think, though, coaching does help raise the awareness. I often say, if all I did in a session was raise this person's awareness, my job is somewhat done. It's not an easy proposition, though.
And explain awareness.
Well, what do you know about yourself that needs to be understood in this particular situation? Mm-hmm. And what have you done in the past? And that's probably, sometimes we can go into the past for this, mm-hmm. that has worked in this particular situation or challenge. Mm-hmm. And what you see now, a lot of the time I see breakthrough, because in hearing and the active listening that the coaching session engages into, you really see certain patterns or certain situations that you go, uh-oh, interesting. And that's sometimes kind of shows something there. And sometimes, you know, we do things because they have worked for us in the past.
Right, right.
But they no longer serve us. So you have to be aware that they no longer serve you. Like, for example, you were mentioning before an armor. So if you were used to having an armor and you keep having your armor, but when you get to the high level and you need to show empathy for the people that you work with, that armor is not going to serve you.
Yeah.
So what do we do with that? And only through awareness can you change things. You can change the thing you're not aware of because you don't know that they're even there. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it's really about that part of trying to uncover something that you can then move to a different place and grow.
Yeah. Yeah. I never thought of awareness in that way. So thank you so much for sharing that. What is the one quality you wish that you see more of in leaders?
Definitely emotional intelligence. And I don't say that lightly. It's a very difficult thing. A lot of leaders have spent their youth developing their intellect, which is a fantastic thing and very, very needed. However, it often comes at the cost of emotional growth. And you cannot, there's no shortcuts for that. It has to happen. So luckily, emotional intelligence can be learned if one is willing and one sees the benefit.
And there's also like a ton of books and access to information nowadays to even start to harness emotional intelligence at any age as well.
Yes, I was very lucky that I saw my kids, you know, when they're in the elementary school, they were taught about, you know, buckets and filling someone buckets and being aware of other people and being kind. And okay, good. It's about time we teach those things.
Yes, yes. Valerie, thank you so much for sharing all of the knowledge that you shared here with us today. All of the knowledge that you shared today will really help both males and females take their career to the next level. So thank you again.
Well, you're very welcome. It was a pleasure. Thank
you. All right. Thanks. How I Got Through It is edited by Rihanna Smith. If you're enjoying the show, feel free to subscribe to Apple or Spotify so you never miss an episode. You can also rate the show and feel free to leave a comment. We read all of them. Thanks.